Herzlich willkommen zu Saatkorn, deinem Podcast mit Inspiration für eine bessere Arbeitswelt. Hallihallo und herzlich willkommen zum Saatkorn Podcast. Heute wird's, glaube ich, richtig spannend. Ich habe jemanden am Start, der ein Unternehmen gegründet hat, was gigantisch gewachsen ist in sehr, sehr kurzer Zeit. Es ist ein Kollege aus Holland, aus den Niederlanden. Es ist Job van der Voort. Er ist CEO und Co-Founder von Remote. Und we will speak English right now. Hello, Job. Nice to have you here on the show.
Ja, danke schön, Gero.
Hey, we can speak German.
No, that's about it. That's where we're going to stop.
You didn't tell me so. Anyway, I'm fascinated, and I guess this question comes up all the time. And usually it's not polite to ask this question, but how old are you, Job?
No, you can. I'm 35.
Yeah, I would assume that I would have said actually a little bit younger because you look really fresh. I envy you a little bit. And this is an interesting question because you have built a company that's growing so fast. It's almost unbelievable. And I really like here from the Netherlands, close to Amsterdam, but actually Remote is anywhere and everywhere, right?
Yeah, that's about true. Yeah, I mean, we try to be everywhere. I think one of the things we realized is the world is really, really big. And yeah. When you try to be everywhere, that's actually a really long path.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about the founding story of Remote. How did this all come together?
Yeah, I am going way, way back. I used to be a neuroscientist. I left that to try to start a startup with a friend, which went nowhere. Startup completely failed. I ran out of money really quickly. I had no money, so to find a job, and eventually ended up working for a company that was just getting started, GitLab. And when we were getting started with GitLab, so I met Sietse, the founder of GitLab. I met him at another job, and GitLab was just an open source company. And he decided, I'm going to make a business out of this. And when he did, he said, well, you know, open source software is built online with people all over the world. People communicate asynchronously. We might as well build a company in the same way. And so we built a fully remote distributed company. And what we found was that actually works really well. GitLab was really successful, and it IPO'd a few years ago, and it's still growing quite a lot. It does really well. And it had people in, at the time that I was there, we had people in 67 different countries. And what we found was that everything about working that way worked well. The people were happy. It worked well as a business. It was very easy to find talent. It was also very cost effective because you don't need office space. You don't need to pay everybody a San Francisco salary. Even though you pay people great and better than what they would earn locally, you don't necessarily have to pay everybody, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so it really felt like we built a company of the future. But there was one thing that wasn't working very well. And that was, you would hire somebody in a country where you never hired somebody before. And then we had to figure out, how do we employ this person? How do we make sure that
taxes, regulation,
labor laws, etc. Yeah, it was really terrible. It was really complicated. And so I figured, well, the future is going to be like look like this. Yeah, companies are going to function like this. But somebody has to solve this difficult problem. And so we started Remote, Marcelo and I, the person who I started that very first startup with coming out of science. And to specifically solve the problem. And that's why we started Remote, to solve that, to create more international businesses. But above all, to create a world in which, independent of where you are, you have access to great opportunities, which is something that I don't think really was the case before we got started.
I think it's very interesting. I mean, on LinkedIn, and I don't know if this is accurate right now. I suppose so. The start of Remote was in 2019, January 2019. Yep. Obviously, all the concepts, ideas, discussions would have been in 2018, perhaps 2017.
Yeah.
How did you come up with this great name? Yeah, of course, you did not know what happened just a year afterwards with COVID.
No, actually, yeah. So When I was working at GitLab, of course, we had the idea for this already for a long time. And in the summer of 2018, I started working on transitioning away from GitLab to founding this company. And the first thought was, well, I want to help more companies work remotely. I wasn't really sure yet on whether we were going to do exactly what we do today, right? But like, I thought that would be one of the things. And I figured, well, the best name for this company is going to be called Remote. You know, and I just looked up what is on remote.com, the domain. It was my number one choice. And then I negotiated with the person running a little company on that domain to take that over. Initially, we tried to use that and we ended up discarding that. But that was it. It was just the first thing that came to mind. So like, it was not a good idea. It was like literally the only idea I had, and it was not the second one.
I really love it, especially hindsight. Obviously, it's a really great name, I suppose. On the other hand, might be difficult because remote became such a normal word for everyone.
Yeah.
So, but still, if you Google remote, your company is quite at the top. So. Well done, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's a net positive. For sure, there's some challenges. And nowadays, we also work for companies that are fully in office, right? If you want to run payroll with your company, you're in one country and everybody goes to the office every single day, 5 days a week, we can still work. We can still be great for you. But I think it probably turned out okay.
How would you define yourself as a company? Are you an employer of record, or would you define it a little bit different? Surely you have this as an offering, but at least from my perspective, from the outside, you're doing it quite differently compared to the other EORs. How do you see that?
Yeah, I think, you know, we are an employer of records. Nowadays, we do much more, right? So we provide essentially a whole platform for everything, for payroll, for employer records, paying out contractors. So I think a generic descriptor would be an HR platform. The way we like to think about it is that we're really almost like an HR platform as a service, right? We have massive amounts of infrastructure and technology, infrastructure in terms of entities, in terms of people, experts, in-house experts. We have our own payment network. And so we have all these different components that we offer to businesses independent of how they want to work with us, whether they want to work directly with us or whether they want to integrate with us. A very large part of our business actually nowadays is integrating with partners. And so they, like Gusto, for example, they want to offer the ability to pay people everywhere. And so instead of building the same thing we built, which is all these entities around the world, and, you know, gazillion bank accounts and whatever else, they just use our technology. And so, yeah, I don't know. Somebody in our team was like, hey, we're like an HR platform as a service. And I kind of like that. I think that sort of matches with what we are and what we ambition to be.
Yeah, I love that too. And I think it fits me coming from the HR tech crowd. It was a little bit like, at first I thought, yeah, it's clear, it's an EORR. But then I felt like, no, it's more than that. If I look at the platform and if I look at your solutions and what you provide, I also like the website. It clearly says recruit, pay, manage, partner, and learn. So I love that. Yeah. It's a different approach than all the other platforms, at least from my point of view. So that's great. And also, what you write there, talent is everywhere, opportunity should be too, because actually the opportunities are there, but not necessarily where the talent is, right?
So, yeah, exactly.
And you solve that. That's great. And in terms of technology, where do you stand now? We are talking now at the very end of 2024. Actually, it's my last meeting and your last meeting. So yeah. Thanks for taking the time. But given AI, and agentic AI, I suppose if you talk about partnerships and links to other software players, I suppose that AI and agentic AI will play a major role also for you. And how is that?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I think one of the things that sets us a little bit apart from like a typical SaaS is that we have a lot of expertise and we have a lot of in-house knowledge. And up until recently, it was very hard to access that, right? Other than directly. Like if you had a question, you want to employ a particular person in a particular country for a particular job. You know, that's a really complex thing to do because all those variables, you know, can change. And up until recently, you basically had an expert answering that question or somebody really good in our support team knowing how to find that information. And today, AI can actually serve that information really, really well. And so that's really, really helpful. And so for us, on one hand, it changes the way that we can help our customers and our partners. So it makes it much easier for us to give them access to particular types of information. On the other hand, what is very interesting is that it doesn't necessarily like solve for a large part of our business. Like it's not transformational yet for the expertise side. You know, when you're talking about labor laws or when you're talking about like, we transact a lot of money, there's not a big role yet for AI there. You definitely don't want an AI with, even with like a minuscule small chance that it would hallucinate something, your margin of error is zero, right? So we cannot make any mistakes when it comes to wiring your taxes, for example. We wired the wrong amount, we are in deep trouble, and so are you, right? So it is a very interesting time. I would say that across remote, we are aggressively using AI where possible, especially to make humans more efficient and to bring knowledge faster to customers. And on the other hand, you know, it's an opportunity for us to evaluate, like, well, these things that we rely so heavily today on humans, are they going to change? How fast are they going to change? And what can we do with it? It's been really, really interesting. And I think one of the biggest examples is we have an AI bot in our platform. And our first implementation was very naive. It was like a RAG workflow where you just pull some information and we serve it to you. And we quickly discovered that this wasn't good enough of a solution. Like we had to be much more specific about it and care a lot about like giving you sources of information and giving you the full context to whatever we were serving. Because, yeah, I mean, if you ask me, can I do X in country Y? And I just say yes, and you're going to do it, and you don't have the long answer, which contains a whole bunch of asterisks, then you might run into problems. So yeah, very exciting. I love everything related to AI. I think it's really exciting to see the evolution, and we experiment a lot with it. For our industry in particular, it certainly is very, very interesting.
Then again, it's also good news that the expertise of your staff, of your workforce is still super important. Yeah. So oh, yeah. I think the mixture it's about the mixture at the end of the day. In terms of people, how many people work for remote these days?
So our own team has about 2,000 people.
And completely all over.
All over the
world,
yeah, in like 90 countries, some ridiculous number like that, yeah, all over. And I, you know, most of them are Western Europe or in the US, but really we have people in more than 90 countries, I think. So yeah, it is all over the world.
And in terms of customers, do you have an ICP or are you very open? I mean, in terms of the EOR, I guess there will be an ICP. But if you say, yeah, you might use just our payroll function or just our recruitment area, I don't know. So,
yeah, no, actually, because we have many different products, it varies a little bit. As an employer of record, we serve essentially any kind of business. And we do, you know, we have, for example, Toyota in Japan, Burger King in the US, Aston Martin in the UK, but also like a million small startups, yeah. And like all sorts of businesses, way wider than I ever anticipated. In the beginning, I thought, oh, we would only serve startups, but it really is all over, from really large to really small. With other products, it varies a little bit. Like with our recruiting product, which is still early, it's still in beta. You see different kinds of customers. And with payroll is a really complicated market, right? And so for now, for example, we do certain sectors, but not others. We don't do construction in certain countries because there's collective bargaining agreements that are really complex and there's great vertical players there. So it's all over, but generally, if you have a company that has knowledge workers, we tend to be able to serve you really, really well.
Ah, okay, that's interesting. So the blue collar region, of course, there's also difficulties with time plans and shifts and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, surprisingly, we do more and more of that. So we support like hourly workers nowadays. We can do some shift work. But often there's like great niche players and vertical players, and our focus is on like, you know, the horizontal knowledge worker based companies for the most part. And then over time, as we get better and we expand our technology, we support more. But what we don't do is we don't support companies where we feel like we have to do a lot of manual work or we have to make a lot of exceptions, because that sort of hurts the experience for the customer, because things are slower, things are harder, things are harder to do. And we want everybody to have a great experience with us.
Yeah, I believe that. In terms of the overall development in such a short time frame, I mean, the company is now 5 years old, right?
Six years.
That's crazy. How do you manage growth at the end of the day?
I mean, you do your best. I always say, you know, you have to keep your hands on the wheel and your feet near the accelerator and the brake. And yeah, it's never a smooth ride when you grow really, really fast, you know, to stretch that analogy a little bit. Then we built on strong foundation. So one of the things we had is we have our handbook, which is still public, remote.com/handbook, where we write down, these are our policies, these are our processes, these are our values. And that provides like a foundation and somewhat of a scaffolding for the company and the culture. And then you just continuously have to make pragmatic changes. So as an example, today I ask regularly the company, do an ask me anything. So I put in Slack, I say, ask me anything, people submit questions there. And then I answer them in a Loom, in a video that I record and I share with the whole company. And somebody asked like, oh, you know, there's been a lot of changes in the company recently. And I said, well, this has always been true. And I get this question, like, and why is that? And I said, this has always been true. And somebody asked me every 3 to 6 months, why are there so many changes in the company? And one of the criticisms we get, or some of the things that people have said about us, is like, well, working remote means there are a lot of changes all the time. And that's true, because the company is growing so fast, you need to be really pragmatic, because things that work at a certain scale stop working really quickly. And so just be highly pragmatic and work with that. And that's what we've been doing, and that's what we'll continue to do. And this expectation I always give everybody is that we're going to make changes. Don't assume that if anything is the way it is, it's because somebody sat down and thought about it. It was probably like, well, whatever works for this moment is the thing that we're going to do. And then if that stops working or breaks terribly, then we'll change it, which is probably going to be within 3-6 months or so.
Yeah, I guess change is just system imminent.
We could it's a constant. Change is a constant. And if you get comfortable with it, it's actually really nice, because you sort of like, it becomes much more fluid. You start to realize that it's not about the rules or the processes, it's about the output. And the processes are there, just there to make sure that things don't collapse or explode.
Oh, I like that. I like that, to see it this way around and to make this very clear. A question, I guess, that a lot of people that are listening now might have in their heads is, do you see the tendency to bring your staff together in person from time to time? And do you do that? Is it possible?
No, we don't do it with the whole team. So we did this at GitLab, and I learned that this is not actually a great way to spend your time or money. And so we do it in smaller groups. So we have departments and teams that get together. Our executive team comes together once a quarter. And that's useful, but it's useful because we essentially just sit for like 30 hours in a meeting room together, which is really painful to do if you do it over Zoom. But in general, you know, we encourage people to meet up with each other out of work, and we provide some budget for that. And sometimes teams and departments. That's about it. You know, it's not sustainable and it's not really helpful. There's no real benefit of being together 2,000 people in one location. It people mostly treat it as a vacation, and a few people treat it like a big party, which creates a lot of HR problems. And so we've never done that, other than when we were like 10 people. And we will never do it, at least not under my watch. Like, I don't think that's a great way to spend our time and money. And I think the benefit is not as big. Rather, bringing together smaller groups, I think that can be really efficient, as long as the focus is on bonding. Like, having dinner together is a good way to spend time together and not necessarily doing work. I don't really believe there's much work left in a company like ours, where all our work is digital. There's not a lot of work that is actually done better in person. Easier maybe, but not better, right? The output is not going to be better.
Okay. Would you say that there's a corporate culture at remote? And if so, how would you define that?
I mean, there is a culture, right? I think culture is an emergent property of how people interact with each other and how people feel at work. And so there is a culture, and you cannot deny in any company that there is one. Our values are care, intensity, transparency, excellence, and innovation. And I think we're somewhat aligned with those values. I mean, generally, people care for their work and care for each other, which I think is really important, that you treat each other well and that you're kind towards each other. There's also intensity is one of our values because we find that this is like a great predictor at how well you operate at remote. And intensity does not mean that you are an asshole to each other. Actually, the opposite. We don't want that. But it does mean that you're somewhat intense about your work. And again, that you are able to see past processes to focus on output. And output often means just like making our customers really, really happy. And I think that sort of aligns. I also think that you know, people self-select working for us that value work, but also value the rest of life, right? We are very clear about it that we want you to, like one of the reasons that we are a remote company is so that you can have a healthy life outside of work. And so work can be stressful. Sometimes you have to work long days and sometimes it's difficult, but we also realize that this is not the most important thing in your life. Right. Some days it might be, but most days it isn't.
I like the little video that's on your website where you describe what remote is. And especially there's one sentence, actually it's two sentences I really liked. The future of work is not about work. It's about freedom.
Yeah.
I really like that. So perhaps you can describe what that means to you but also for your company.
Yeah, I think a lot of the rules and structures of work as we know it, you know, outside of the company that I run, is limiting for no reason, right? There's a lack of freedom. You have to be in a particular place at a particular time. That's not convenient to you, but it's convenient to your employer. Not necessarily for good reasons, right? Just for sake of control. And so I think the future of work is very much about having flexibility and freedom in time. You do your work when it's best for you. That's up to limitations of the work, right? We have to be realistic, but like, if you're a software engineer, then you can write software whenever you want, right? Like it doesn't really affect anybody whether you do it in the middle of the night or any other time or like in 15-minute bursts throughout the day. And then flexibility in space, because if you work remotely and you work asynchronously, then you can just decide where you want to live instead of having to live in a location where there happen to be many opportunities where, you know, in a metropolis or of some sort where maybe you don't want to live, right? And I think that's what it is. Like, what is freedom? Freedom is the ability to be wherever you want and to have freedom in how you spend your time. And we make a trade. We say, like, look, we want to spend, we want to gain some of your talents and the output of your talents and time in exchange for paying you a salary. But like, you don't have to be in a particular place to do that. So that's a little bit how I think about it. And like, it's not infinite, the freedom, because you may have a contract with us, right, to do a particular thing. But it is the big difference between how most people work today and how I hope most people work in the future.
Yeah, I guess there will be a clear development. It's fascinating. Obviously, due to COVID, there was a real huge forced tendency to work more in a new work surrounding like you just described it. But at least in Germany, given the difficult economic situation, a lot of companies tend to go backwards instead of forwards. So do you see the same development in the Netherlands or how is it?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's two things. One is that we see this massive undercurrent, right? The undercurrent is people realize that they are happy and happier working remotely, at least partially, and there's greater and greater need for talent still. And so that undercurrent drives remote work really hard, because with more people wanting to work remotely, if you are an employer who says you can work remotely for us, you're going to get a lot of applicants and a lot of people will want to work for you. On the other hand, yes, indeed, employers, they fall back on the patterns that they had. Like they didn't know any better. We've been working from offices for 100 years. So yeah, of course we're going to go back to offices. That is what we have always done. Like population level change is really, really slow, right? No matter what you believe. And so I think that undercurrent is stronger than whatever's happening on the surface, right? In a return to office, you see that you know, in countries even like Germany, but especially here in the Netherlands, for example, or in the US, almost nobody does the 40 hours a week in the office anymore. There's always a compromise, yeah. Right? And that compromise is just it's a leading indicator of what the future is to come. But like, it will still take a really long time. And you know, with AI coming up, I'm not sure whether AI will outrun all of this, which I definitely think is possible. Where you know, rather than you actually spending more time in the office less time in the office because your work becomes more flexible, it might just be that you have less work to do because of AI. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's exciting for sure.
We'll see what happens in the future. But that's a good point for this time in the discussion. What are your plans for 25? Any major things you want to achieve that are willing to tell us right here?
Yeah, I think one of the most exciting things is that early next year, we're coming out with sourcing. And so that allows you to actually find people. So today we help you pay them and we help employ them and stay compliant, etc. But one of the exciting things is that, and like really the last piece of the puzzle in some ways has been helping you find people. And so customers can sign up on a waiting list today already, but it will be out somewhere in Q1 where you can go in and you say, I want a great software engineer that knows this language, for example, and maybe in this region. And then we just show you people. Like we just show you amazing people that you can employ for that. And the nice thing is we can tell you how much it costs, because the reality is, you know, as a business, you have to like balance how much it actually costs to hire somebody. And so we can tell you, well, in aggregate, this is what people are paid in this region. This is what are the costs related to employing somebody. And so I think that's one of the really early exciting things that we're releasing. We're doing a whole bunch of other stuff, but that one for sure, I'm really excited about.
I believe you, because it's a major thing, especially since you are an employer of record. So you can solve all the other issues right away.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Last question for this session. You are really an inspiring guy with a very inspiring company. So is there anything that inspired you during the last, let's say, few months? Did you read something? Did you see something where you felt like, wow, I really have to think about this?
That's a great question. I don't know. I don't necessarily get inspired by other businesses, although I think, you know, the whole AI race is really, really exciting. And I think that's really fun to follow and to see that all happening in front of our eyes. And I think it's a really great time to follow technology and to adopt all these things. It feels so early, but I don't know if it's been like this with large revolutions in the past, but at least maybe I wasn't old enough with mobile phones and coming up of the internet. But to me, it's so obvious what the next steps are when it comes to AI, and seeing these really early use cases. For example, we now see that AIs can access your computer and automate your computer. Like OpenAI announced something for that yesterday, Anthropic announced something. So that was very inspiring. A very other thing, which I think is really fun, is there's this fantasy writer that I like to read, Brandon Sanderson. And he's a like incredibly prolific person. He writes so many books, and that I find very inspiring as well. Somebody who essentially is just like crazily prolific in his writing and just keeps going at it. And I think that is really fun as well. And then as last, you know, I have two small kids, and whenever I spend time with them, I realize how not very important every other thing in life is.
I know that. I have four kids myself. So
four kids. Yeah, I couldn't do that. To me, four kids is like, I mean, I could build another startup like this, but four kids seems like too much.
Actually, I'm 20 years older than you are, so there's plenty of time coming. Yeah. You never know. Job, it was a pleasure to have you on the show. It was really great. I was really looking forward to it, and you did not disappoint at all. So I wish you all the best for the future, and of course, all the best for remote too. So thanks for taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So, das war diese Saatkorn-Podcast-Episode. Ich hoffe, dir hat Spaß gemacht und sie hat dir gefallen. Bevor ich jetzt hier rausgehe, noch ein kleiner Tipp für dich. Abonniere doch kostenlos meinen Saatkorn-Newsletter. Dann gibt es jeden Sonntag alle Podcasts, alle News, alle Artikel, alle Verlosungen, alles, was ich auf Saatkorn so mache, gratis in dein Mailpostfach und du hast bequem alles an einem Ort und verpasst nichts mehr. Das Ganze kostet, wie gesagt, nichts. Den Link zum Abo gibt's in den Shownotes. Würde mich freuen, wenn wir uns da wieder treffen. Ganz lieben Dank und bis bald. Ciao.